Loving what you're hearing? Make sure you're subscribed here on your favorite podcast app. Or there's even more waiting for you over on YouTube. On our channel, you'll get to see our fascinating guests demonstrate their techniques in real time. You'll see my animated explanation of complex health concepts made simple, plus all of those you had to be there moments that we mentioned in the show. The Coaching with Maddie episodes will be there too. We're also creating exclusive YouTube shorts, quick, powerful health tips you won't find anywhere else. And let's face it, if we're going to be doom scrolling, which we all do from time to time, you might as well make it worthwhile. Just search How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast on YouTube and hit subscribe to unlock the visual side of becoming a healthy friend of the show. Because sometimes you need to see it to believe it, and also to achieve it. The direct link is in the show notes below. Come and join our YouTube community. Welcome to episode 441. Do you ever find yourself feeling sad or like things are really dark inside your head? Here's a controversial idea. What if feeling down, depression, anxiety, ADHD, ADD, variations of autism, OCD? What if all of these mental health issues are not because life was hard or your feelings were hurt when you were little? But what if it's all actually toxins and the Western diet that damaged the system? Physical damage to your brain and your nervous system. And it's actually not about emotions, really, at all. This might be a hard idea to accept, but I'd like you to listen to this episode with an open mind as we chat with a board-certified psychiatrist who's discovered that so many psychiatric conditions are actually caused by hormone imbalances, inflammation, and head injuries. If someone you love has ever been prescribed psychiatric meds, or if you're curious about what's really going on in your brain when you're feeling heavy or things are dark, then this episode is worth listening to. So, let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome to another How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast episode where you may or may not know, if you're new, you're about to find out. It's my mission to coach 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And we do it without calorie counting, embarrassing weigh-ins, or a forbidden food list. And by real weight loss, I mean we go much deeper than just burning body fat so that you can finally stop self-sabotaging and you don't gain the weight back in just a few months' time. If that sounds like what you're after, then the link to inquire is in the show notes or the caption down below. Click the link, book it in, chat soon. Okay, so today's guest is challenging everything you think you know about mental health treatment. Meet Dr. Maizel DeMayo. She's a board-certified psychiatrist that uses a very different approach to fixing mental and psychiatric conditions, which isn't by instantly defaulting to smashing someone with meds and making them catatonic for the rest of their existence. So that's a refreshing thing to hear. But let's get into it. She's going to tell you a lot more that's way more interesting than I could ever describe her amazing, successful, abundant career. So Maizel, welcome to the show.
Hey there, Maddie. Thank you for having me on. And I think, you know, our mutual friend, Lisa, she's been really good at trying to help me just get the message out. That's really what I want to do. Just want people to know that there is a better way to do psychiatry. It's not just about what you call smashing meds. I like that. But, you know, in order to like understand what I do now, I just want to give a little background to what I was. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started out really, even in medical school, I was really fascinated with pathophysiology and just the physiology of how we come about to have a disease. So with that in mind, everybody thought I was going to be an internist. So I thought so too, but I thought like it was a good thing that I didn't get into training right away. I had to get a job in a cardiology office. And I thought that was fascinating. Some of the doctors getting upset because those internists were referring to them and they're like, this patient has anxiety. Why do they make me? I go, oh, then I better know when to refer. And so then that got me in the road of like, I wanted to do a little bit of both. So I found a program, internal medicine and psychiatry. I said, oh, this is going to be great because I'm going to be an internist with a psychiatric background. But I realized at the end of my first year, I loved psychiatry. Because I didn't realize that it gave me the luxury to to spend time with my patients, hear their story, listen to their struggles, and learn about their hopes and dreams. That, you know, when a patient comes in, it's not just about them telling you their symptoms and that standard treatment, listening to their symptoms, find the right medicine, but then you're not getting the full story, because I want to know, what is it that they're looking for and how can I help them? But that took me a while to come to that realization. So after training, I did 10 years of standard treatment. Here I was, board certified, mastering my DSM. I thought I knew my meds, how to even prescribe the ones for like certain conditions, certain mental health issues, different kinds of depression, and even using meds to treat side effects. But at the end of the day, I realized that this was purely a myth, trying to find the perfect medicine. So I really realized, what am I doing? Patients are not getting better. So here I am switching meds because they quit working, or they're having side effects. And the worst of them is suicide. And I hear that in the psychiatry world, but they kind of downplay it. But if you look at the history of suicide and antidepressants, I mean, it was over 20 years ago that the FDA put a black box warning on these antidepressants saying, hey, these cause suicidal thoughts and behavior. Even the PDR, which is the Bible of how to prescribe medications, all of them, antidepressants are only for short-term use.
Yeah.
Meaning that, you know, when a patient is no longer depressed, get them off of it. But doctors, even myself, are afraid, oh no, what if they have a relapse in depression if you stop the medicine? Well, the truth of the matter is they're going to relapse no matter what. Because when I went in this integrative path, and in order to really relay the importance of why we have to have an integrative approach to psychiatry, I went on a rabbit hole, and I was just, my mind was blown, that we never really talked about in training that there is a rate of treatment resistance with medications. So, you know, finding the holy grail of finding the perfect medicine is nothing but a farce, unfortunately. Because the latest data, even with depression, there is a 30% chance of treatment resistance, meaning you can't find the right medicine. But what's most interesting is, even when I was in my training, there was a lot of buzz about the STAR*D study, which is basically 41 centers across the United States that said, all right, we're going to do this major study. We're going to figure out how to treat depression. You know, like, you're going to get all our minds together, get our data together. And unfortunately, the rate of treatment resistance, because they would recommend trying four medications, it was 50%, not 30, in the general public.
Wow.
And what's scary is they reanalyzed the data in 2023. The rate was 65%.
Really?
So I was floored when I read that. I was like, what? And so I was like, what are we doing with these, you know, patients that are not responding? And if the raw data in America, I apologize, I didn't research Australia.
That's okay.
But in America, it's 10 million Americans are suffering with treatment-resistant depression. And I'm not even, and anxiety is not any better, even like OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, 50%.
That's huge.
And bipolar disorder, I don't know how much you know, you seem to know a lot about mental health, but bipolar disorder where, you know, you get manic, you're depressed, but the hardest episode to treat in bipolar disorder is depression, because that's the highest risk of suicide. 66% don't respond to their first medication.
Wow.
We're like, why? Right?
Yeah.
Because we're looking at psychiatry wrong. We're looking at like thinking, oh, it's just about how you feel and here's the medicine for that symptom. But what I discovered is that it is a neuropsychiatric illness. Mm-hmm. That's mental health disorders that comes from chemical changes in the brain triggered by stress that releases cortisol and decreases fructalkin, which is a chemical that if it's low, it triggers inflammation, which is really the new theory behind depression. Because when that happens, inflammation, there is a total disruption of your neurotransmitter balance. You know, the serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine goes way down because of oxidative stress and your brain cells are not making them. But then other bad things happening as well. GABA. I think you know about GABA, where it is a anti-anxiety neurotransmitter. Mm-hmm. That goes down too. And then glutamate. What do we know about glutamate? It's excitatory. So that goes up, GABA goes down, all your good feel neurotransmitters are here. So no wonder people are feeling anxious and no wonder these medicines are not working. Why? Because antidepressants don't address inflammation. And they're just a Band-Aid. So I was like, whoa. This is the real cause of mental illness.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, that was just like phenomenal for me to like come to that realization. So how did I know these things? Yeah, I just want to share a little bit of my journey, that how I derived, because I was banging my head trying to figure out how to get my patients better, because I'm a little perfectionist, and I don't want to hear my patients saying, "Doc, I feel terrible again," you know? And so I figured, you know what? I need to look deeper into this. What can we do to treat mental illness? So I thought the answer was in genetics. So like looking at a column of medicines, and I understand you also know quite a bit about it. But so I thought, okay, I'm going to pick the right medicine in this column that says that, but didn't get anywhere. and I was like, well, you know, no wonder people poo-poo genetic testing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I really understood looking at genetics from a different lens that instead of going about, hey, here's the right medicine for you, I was looking at genetics through pharmacodynamics, meaning that how these genes affect the levels of our neurotransmitters. There's a lot of talk now, MTHFR.
Yeah.
Well, I've been talking about this for 10 years and now everybody's like, oh, you know, I got to find this out, you know. But even with me knowing that and knowing the treatment, I still wasn't getting the results that I thought I was going to get with this medicine. In fact, it made some people anxious and I didn't understand that until I correlated it with the other genetics, particularly with the dopamine gene that breaks down dopamine, the COMT gene, catecholamethylene transferase, that breaks down dopamine as well as estrogen. Don't ask me why those two are related, but from a mental health standpoint, they kind of explain things. So some people are high dopamine metabolizers and some people are low dopamine metabolizers in conjunction with estrogen. So if you understand that concept, you can understand why some people get depressed and some people get anxious.
Yeah.
But you have to correlate the two. Otherwise, you will have a bad outcome. And I started getting into brain injury. That was at the tail end of my journey. But then that also, I learned to correlate that with the chemical brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is really what I call the fertilizer of the brain. There's lots of ways to increase brain-derived neurotrophic factor, diet, exercise, you know, anything that stresses you can increase that. But I think this explains why some people with brain injury don't respond to, or let's just say they have a poor ability to recover from a brain injury because their brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, runs low. And I found this in one of my patients who's a former NFL player. And I said, well, maybe this is one of the reasons why. some people don't recover from a brain injury as well because we're not supporting their BDNF. And I can get into that later, like what are those natural supplements, because I always believe that I want to work with quote unquote the earth in a way. Like, you know, we have a great designer that everything came from standard things that are from the earth. So I wanted to know, like, what is it that we can do to support somebody's mental health as healthy, as natural as we can?
Yeah.
So once I figured that out, I needed to learn what kind of supplements I'm going to give my patient. And then, so I was very pleasantly surprised. I think you may know who Dr. Daniel Amen is.
I do.
He's like the guru of, you know, integrative psychiatry. And I was just pleasantly surprised. I mean, my eyes were wide open with, you know, some of the lectures that, you know, I listened to with him. The first one was like, bingo. You know, he said, it's not about your mental health, it's about your brain health. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Because where does mental health start?
In the brain.
It's in your brain, your limbic system, you know, your ability to control your sleep and all that. Your frontal lobe is what helps you behave. Mm-hmm. So if that's not healthy, then again, maybe that's why your antidepressants are not working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, inflammation plays a big role. And I started really getting into toxins too, that they play a huge role, especially the herbicide glyphosate. Mm-hmm. Really bad, causes oxidative stress. It causes all that inflammatory reaction. And it could play a role in somebody developing dementia. Mm-hmm. And I find this a lot in my patients that come because they have dementia. I mean, psychiatrists really don't treat dementia per se. They come to us because of behavioral issues, but it's the same thing. I'm looking at their toxins. They're full of glyphosate. They're full of lead or full of like heavy metals. And I'm like, oh, that's why. And so like, if you treat and remove those toxins, they do get better. And like, I had a patient that did that, you know, because he was just losing his memory. Then I found out what he had. Then here I was, I'm trying to get rid of it. So I thought he was doing better. So I stopped the detox. Guess what? He went downhill. Mm-hmm. And I said, all right, you're going to stay on this until I really am confident that you have gotten rid of all the things that's in your brain. Yeah. That's causing you to not behave well or remember things, or he was just going out of sorts and scaring his family.
Yeah. So far, you've covered a lot of ground from sort of, you know, your career and what yeah. you've learned. And, you know, you've touched on agriculture and lifestyle mm-hmm. and brain injuries, head injuries. But going back to the start, why are psychiatrists and doctors allowing, and why are consumers allowing, pharmaceutical companies to continue pumping out drugs that only have a 30, 50, 65% resistance? Like, why are doctors still prescribing drugs that aren't working?
You know, I'll tell you a story in training. I mean, we were pretty much in bed with pharmaceuticals from the beginning. Mm-hmm. They're bringing us lunch, they're bringing us dinner. And I thought, this is the way to do psychiatry. This is it, you know, like, yeah. Oh, these people are helping me, teaching me about a new drug after so many years of like using their drugs. I'm like, it's not working for my patients.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sad. Because, you know, a lot of doctors are quote unquote bought out by, you know, the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of money. It can be tempting. But I'm like, from the beginning of why we went into medicines, to do no harm.
Yeah.
So I've taken a step back from that. And I don't really entertain a lot of them anymore coming into my office. I'm like, you can talk to my NPs if you want to, but you know, like, how does that really help my patient?
Yeah.
What are the side effects? You know, and so there's very few medicines that I can actually say, hey, I'm going to give this a try. And the ones I didn't really last very long. So again, it's about like the FDA approval. I mean, how did they get that? Who knows? You know?
You said before as well, in regards to, I guess, the genetic factors of mm-hmm. people being, you know, under or over methylators or yeah. producers of dopamine mm-hmm. or all of the chemicals in the brain that play into this mental health picture.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, is does, we've got a couple of parts to the question.
Yeah.
For the epigenetic effects, like, mm-hmm. you know, the way that we can change the expression of those genes.
Yeah.
Is that influenced by our diet, lifestyle, or is it something we're stuck with? Or is it something that was formulated when we were in utero based on mum's diet?
That's a huge question.
Yes, I know.
Mom's diet, you know, with the baby. I mean, there's a lot of data now talking about heavy metals in the pregnant woman and developing autism. So maybe that's true. But I'm going to give you a scenario. You can have all the bad genes. But if your life was perfect, you never had toxins, you were never stressed, you never had a head injury, you're going to be fine, you know, because that comes with the, you know, epigenetics part of it. And it's how your genetics helps you respond to things. So if you have a bad life, brain injury, you're full of toxins, and you're MTHFR deficient, and you're low BDNF, and you know your dopamine balance is either high or low, you're going to be a hot mess. And so I have to explain this to my patients. And sometimes they can't even get their head wrapped around, well, what do you mean, doc? My depression is due to a brain injury or, you know, full of toxins. I'm like, yeah. But it takes a long time. Even this afternoon, this patient who has MTHFR and low BDNF, I've been telling her this for years. You know, you got to take your, you know, L-methylfolate and you got to do a certain diet. It wasn't until she started looking at, like, you know, podcast. Oh, yeah, doc. Yeah, you've been telling this for me. I know I wasn't listening, but now I am. And it, like, I'm eating, you know, the methylation diet and avoiding excess folic acid in our bread. Oh, I feel good now. I'm not depressed. I was like, okay, at least, you know, she got it at the end. But I'm just like, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's hard for them to accept the fact that a psychiatrist can know as much as a medical person. We did start in medicine, you know, but
yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of my colleagues, they just throw away that knowledge and they just think, I'm an expert in medicines and yeah. what to give. And I, no doubt, you know, there's some really, really brilliant people in my field that really know their chemistry and their receptors and they really know that. But unfortunately, still at the end of the day, they're still struggling with their depression, anxiety, psychosis, substance use. So we have to go outside the box.
Yeah.
And be able to see the whole picture in a patient. Otherwise,
my experience working with doctors in hospitals, and this isn't against any individual doctor, it's more a judgment of the way that medicine is taught, mm-hmm. is that things are broken and they need to be fixed with medicine. Whereas I like to frame it as, so originally I'm a biologist, right? And so I believe that, you know, Mother Nature or biology doesn't make mistakes. And so when it comes to a problem with the body or the psychology or whatever, it's a compensatory mechanism, right? It's trying to solve the problem, whatever imbalance is in there, with the resources that are available, whether that be nutritional or, you know, brain chemicals or hormones or whatever it is. And so the system isn't broken. It's just compensating for a lack of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's us as clinicians to help figure that out. Because I think it's better to know the root cause of things other than masking something, because you're going to wind up having sexual side effects. Yeah. The, you know, I like your title, How to Not Get Sick and Die. But so I'm looking at it from a mental health, you know, like how to, you know, not die because you're going to give medicines that could give you a risk of suicide.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so we have to look further into that. And so that's why I came up with the BrainWell program. But then how I began that, I did what I call a BrainWell panel that looks at everything, mm-hmm. inflammation, vitamin levels, metabolism of vitamins, and making sure your kidney and your liver are okay. And at the end of it, a 28 panel of hormones. I'm not just talking about your testosterone. I'm talking about how your brain hormones affects your peripheral hormones, how it affects your cortisol, your thyroid, and your sex hormones, because it'll tell me whether this is coming from a brain injury or is it just life as you get older. So it's totally different approach. And you'd be surprised how many 20-year-olds I see with low T.
Very common.
And they're like, fine. Then I get this history like, oh yeah, I play football. You know, like, oh, I fell. You know, they had ADHD and they were just, you know, active and hitting their heads and, you know, risky. And so I need to know those things because it's like the biomarkers are what's going to give me the roadmap to help these patients. This is where I ran into the concept of precision psychiatry, because doing these biomarkers, we have to know what to give these patients instead of giving them unnecessary things. We have to give them what they really need and make sure they avoid some of the stuff that other people say, this is great for you. You know, like a high protein diet may not be the best thing for this patient, but it's always, you just have to like have this collaboration with your patient that like sometimes even if I see the data and I think, you know, I need to go a this direction, but like sometimes I go opposite that, but then I work with them to make sure. And then, yeah, let me give you an example with like my, I treat kids sometimes, but only the ones whose parents are like, I want to do as natural as we can, you know? And so like, yeah, there's, yeah, I think she's now in college and I'm really proud of her because like, she wants to be a doctor herself, you know, but like this, she started out with depression and cutting herself and, you know, all those things. Yeah. And I found out she was full of glyphosate. And then she told me that she had a problem with her adrenals. They have that POTS, you know. And then I thought, like, I think probably the glyphosate did that to you. So we've been working on decreasing that. Mm-hmm. And then she is a low dopamine metabolizer. But I tried every ADHD medicine that was natural. It wasn't working. So I said, okay, you know, like, you're going to have to understand. I may have to give you a stimulant. But she's on a teeny weeny dose of methylphenidate, 10 milligrams, and she's doing great. That's the whole point of why we need to do precision, because it's like, you don't need high dosages of medications that give you side effects. So you have to walk that journey with the patient. And so I like that because like, I see some crazy dosages in some people and I'm like, wow. And no wonder they're not functioning, you know? That is really the benefit of why I want to do precision psychiatry, because you don't need to be on like, let's say 60 milligrams of fluoxetine that causes you to be fat, that causes you to not desire, you know, sex. And you just need maybe a 10 milligram because everything else is supported. You know, and at the end of the day, maybe you don't even need that. You know, you just need a little bit of it right now.
Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too. Which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there. Well, that leads me to ask the question. Being a millennial myself, you know, I went through the era of social media being abundant and personal development really being in everybody's faces and the idea that psychology, you don't have a shrink because you're messed up. It's okay to have a psychologist. But that introduced the idea to my generation and everybody else around me, older, younger, that, you know, we're all traumatized. And I'm talking about trauma emotionally. Mm-hmm. So listening to you speak, what comes up for me is a question, and I've got my own theories on it, but I'd love to hear your answer, which is that maybe, particularly in the West, but maybe the whole world, we're lacking resilience and we're focusing on our emotional trauma, when actually it's not emotional trauma that's done all of this devastating psychological self-identity damage. We're just living in this glyphosate-ridden world, this toxic food world, this rich carbohydrate world. Like, what are your thoughts? Are we unfairly weighting all of our challenges and behavioral issues and focus issues and productivity issues on emotional trauma when it's actually physical damage to the body and head injuries and physical trauma rather than emotional trauma? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I totally believe all that, you know, but unfortunately, you know, my daughter's a millennial too, and she's just, a lot of times, you know, they're kind of just protected. and so that plays a part. And then the fact that, you know, they were just so used to being on the screen so young. Mm. And there's good and bad to it. And even the blue light that comes from the screen is not good.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, why are we getting heavier? Because our diet is not as good as it used to be. You know, because everything is industrialized. And I'm so glad now people are finally starting to look into this. And yeah, there's, I don't know if you've heard of the brain energy theory. It's with Christopher Palmer.
No, I haven't. I know Christopher Palmer, but I haven't heard of that theory.
Yeah, that he's the one that talks about that. And it's all about mitochondrial health. And how do you get that? Or the theory of mental health. It's decrease in ATP production. Mm-hmm. And how does that happen? Or how do you treat that? Because he's had plenty of patients who adapted what he recommended for them to do with diet and exercise and supplements. And they are no longer having schizophrenia and they're losing weight.
That's great.
It's Yeah. Processed foods, bad.
Yes, completely.
You know, and then sugar. Oh, I mean, I'm going through a sugar detox myself because my eyes were like, what? 24 grams of sugar in this tea that's supposed to be like not even very sweet. I'm like, oh, no. I'm just like, no wonder we have such a problem with metabolic syndrome and diabetes. And then that also affects your mental health. And if you, I don't know if you understand that, like, there was this whole thing, controversy about newer antipsychotics causing, you know, metabolic syndrome. Mm-hmm. But now I think about it going, well, I don't know. I mean, yes, those medicines may. It may have something to do with our diet now. Mm. It's not good. Everything is processed and all the nutrients from, you know, the foods are not there. So it probably is a combination of those two things. The scary thing is, the autism rate is going up. I believe it is diet. I believe it is exposure in utero. But, and I also think there's a genetic component to it. I have like a few of my kids per se, you know, and my patients that have diagnosis of autism. And I'm like, well, go ahead and get that diagnosis. But I really think this is the problem, the underlying issue. And sometimes it is a genetic issue. And so if you support the problem with the genetic issue, then, you know, they get to function much better than people who didn't get that advice. So, and then the other thing is, because I was going from genetics and integrative and I still was not getting what I needed. And so I added TMS. Do you know anything about that?
No. Yeah. If you could unpack that for us, that'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, you know, the third component of what I call my BrainWell program. TMS, I really didn't know too much about it. And I thought it was a novel treatment, but it stands for transcranial magnetic stimulation. What it does it actually supplies electrical activity to the brain. This part where the DLP sits, where like all your neurotransmitters are made. So it's again, the brain energy theory, like give it energy, maybe it'll start making what it's supposed to make. Gotcha. And then what I do like about TMS is that it's great for brain injury as well, because it increases brain-derived neurotrophic factor. But I did notice that if I didn't correlate genetics and nutrition to it, the TMS wasn't as successful. So I needed to know this thing. So I often tell people, if you're going to do TMS with me, I need your genetics, I need your labs, because I want to make sure, again, I'm a perfectionist, is that I want to make sure you are thoroughly going to benefit from this, because TMS has a 60% success rate. Well, because of our protocol, we can get it up to 80.
Great.
So, but then, you know, but what do I do with that 20%? So I always knew hormones had a place in mental health, but I didn't understand the gravity or the connection between the two until I took this course by Dr. Mark Gordon. He created this software called the Millennium Protocol. So, because I was like, well, I'm in psychiatry. I don't have the brain power capacity to like learn all these hormones. But then so he created that. And so like all I do is plug in all the numbers. And then out comes a protocol that focuses on natural treatments. I have men in my program that never had testosterone shots. And their testosterone goes up. And then sometimes some women, I do have to start them on some creams in the beginning. But we work with your own physiology to help you create your own hormones so you won't need that. And I'm a testimony of that, too, because I used to have to take those creams. I never really got the full benefit of what the protocol I'm on now. You know, I'm on two natural supplements. Off the creams, I'm sleeping. I'm like, my thinking, I would say 90% so much improved, because I noticed, too, as you know, when you're in your 40s and 50s, I'm like, why am I cannot remember that word? So that's pretty much gone, you know, and I am not on any bioidenticals or whatever it is that, you know,
HRT,
women talk about pellets. And I'm like, I said, you know, I found a better way. And that was through Dr. Mark Gordon's protocol. And it really took me under his wing. And I'm just like, glad I found you. Because when I was searching at like trying to figure out how to do hormones, everything just seems so intimidating. And I found this guy by accident. Actually, my brother found him through Joe Rogan. And he was following him for a while. And then he said, yeah, I got this protocol. So like, you know, he emailed him, my brother emailed him. And like, we told him about our practice. We're in psychiatry. You know, we really don't want to focus on medication. So we want to learn more about HRT. And so he calls him and they were talking for 2 hours. And I'm like, who are you talking to? And then so like he really did take me under his wing and really taught me the connection between, because he focuses on brain injury, but really, if you want to just look at hormones and mental health, like any kind of insult to the brain, COVID, anesthesia, also, you know, brain injuries, blast injuries, and even trauma, as you know, it causes like inflammation because it's the same chemical reaction that can cause brain damage, that can cause an autoimmune reaction to the brain, and it starts to affect the parts of the brain that controls hormones. So, and then learning that there are receptors in the brain that for testosterone and all those things. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, I was like, wow. So
I can totally relate to the testosterone and mental health picture, because I for years had up and down mental health, and I just thought it was because I'm a deep thinker. I hold a lot in my head. I unravel concepts and I dissect psychology and philosophy. And then I realized at some point I had low T. When I started sort of working on that naturally with certain Chinese herbs and also using ice.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard the ice the balls strategy. That's extremely effective. And we've done multiple.
That's interesting.
Yeah, literally the ice out of your freezer. get men to sit on it with a layer, you know, like their underwear, 10 minutes every single day, they will notice within 3 to 4 or 5 days a massive increase of testosterone. So Dr. Huberman's talked about it. I've had the guy that sort of made it famous on this podcast multiple times, but I started doing those things and now it's been years. Mm-hmm. My mental health just hasn't wavered whatsoever. And it was, it was low T.
Yeah. So like, you know, my mentor, Dr. Mark Gordon, always says it's not treatment resistant depression until you look at the hormones. And I'm like, yeah, because, you know, I get my patients well enough, but like, let's explore what's going on with your hormones. Mm-hmm. And really the patients that do all four of those components, they are just doing amazing. They're in this three categories. They're either they've never been on psychiatric meds or they're off of them. Mm-hmm. They're weaning them, or maybe for the first time in their life, their meds are finally working with the lowest dose possible with the least amount of side effects.
Yeah, amazing.
And approach mental health like this, throw everything in the kitchen sink, you know, to try to get them do what you need to do because, you know, these patients are treatment resistant and they've been struggling decades. And I have never heard comments from my patient the whole time I was doing standard treatment that, doc, for the first time, I feel good. And these people are suffering for decades, even since childhood. And sometimes it makes me want to cry to hear that from these patients because they start crying because they're like, this is, and I just had somebody who's just in the program just for 30 days. And, you know, she's not 100%, but she's like, I can feel something. You know, I have emotions. And then that's good. Because, you know, antidepressants, what do? They just take away that because they put you in this serotonin fog. Sometimes it's not good, especially for certain people. You know, some people require higher levels of serotonin, but there again, that comes with the precision. You know, like who benefits from that? We have to figure that out. And then, you know, use that roadmap to start working our way towards how are we getting the best benefit with the patient. So, you know, the whole point is heal the brain using biomarkers, treat the inflammation. If their C-reactive protein is high, I check for Epstein-Barr virus, which is mono. But I always felt that I wasn't looking for mono. But then I found out that it really is just a marker even for mold toxicity.
Yeah.
Because it cross-reacts with that. And so, and then when I see those things, I ask my patient, can you please do a mold test, heavy metal, glyphosate, you know, even BPA? I mean, I found somebody who had a history of breast cancer, no family history of breast cancer, but she was full of BPA, that plastics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's also controversial too, but it's like,
I'm on board with that idea.
We have to like open our eyes to it. That, you know, the government may not always have our best interest. You think, oh, the FDA is watching our back, you know, and we have to be smarter than them, you know, and start doing our own research.
I want to know what constitutes head trauma, because we did an episode with Lisa Tarmati that you mentioned earlier that connected us.
Yeah.
So for anybody listening, that's episode 399. And we talked specifically about sports head injuries. Mm-hmm. But what constitutes a head trauma? Like, do we hit our head for it to actually be something that is impactful on the chemical production, neurotransmitter, hormone production in our brain? And is that different for a child hitting their head or an adult hitting their head?
One thing I can tell you is like, it's pretty much all the same, but like there's different severities of head injuries. There's a severe one. And then there's the mild traumatic brain injury, or what usually happens with kids or even as football players or soldiers, you know, they are just little knocks in the head, but those little knocks compound, like compounding interest or like those little knocks. If you don't give that brain the opportunity to heal, which is what they call the neuropermissive environment, and then you go back out there and you play and then you get knocked again. I mean, it's like getting, you know, getting kicked and you're bruised and you keep getting kicked every week. And how are you going to heal?
Yeah.
And you will see mental health issues 17 years after even the initial brain injury because it is an inflammatory process. But I would say the process of a brain injury, you know, it can start from even like being born, depending on how difficult the birth was. So I created a questionnaire for my TBI, you know, patients to answer. And then my staff was laughing. It's like, why do you want to know if they had forceps delivery? I'm like, because that's a brain injury. you know?
And, that's so interesting.
So it all causes the same chemical reaction, the inflammation. And if you don't get a hold of that inflammation, then they're never going to get better. So, major, minor, but the minors are like all those, even like soldiers who have had blast injuries because they work with, you know, dynamite or, you know, just whatever strong weapon they use. And they're just like, you know, their whole body is shaking from that. Or even jumping out of a airplane and then you. All those are a little, I think of this, the brain is like a football in a fishbowl. Any movement, it's going to get knocked. You know, the jagged edges in there are going to cause that injury. But the good news is I do believe in plasticity of the brain. And I think that's a new concept. I mean, that explains why somebody who's paraplegic suddenly walks again. Again, give them that neuropermissive environment to heal their nervous system. And it could happen. You know, we have a great designer that allowed us to heal. We just have to eat right, stop putting junk in us, stop smoking, stop drinking, you know, stop putting poison in your body, things that will, you know, stop the ATP production in your brain. So, you know, we just have to, unfortunately, a lot of people don't understand that. And then so, you know, I have some patients who do the program and they're like, you're still doing bad habits. And I'm like, dude, I can give you the best, you know, protocol. But if you're not going to do lifestyle, then it's not going to work. And I have, you know, examples of, you know, does it really work? Yeah, because I have patients that come to me because they're exercising right, they're eating right, and they're not getting the results that they wanted because some people do come to me for weight. The minute I found out what their genetics are, the minute I found out whether they're insulin resistant or they're vitamin deficient, boom, you know, they are getting their results and then hormonal issues. Once you fix all the chemistry inside, now, you know, and then, yeah, I would say like my fiance, God bless him. He was one of my first like experiment because that's what he said. He says, I'm eating right. I'm running, but I'm not getting anywhere. The minute I found out all his genetic issues, all his hormonal, he was in the military, in the Marines. He played football. So
lots of head injuries.
Because I didn't even bother to ask him about that. Let's just run your labs and your genetics. And I'm looking and going, honey, you've had brain injuries, haven't you? It's like, yeah, I play football. And the military is traumatic. I'm like, But, you know, the minute we fixed all that, 2 months later, he was down 40 pounds.
Wow, that's incredible.
And then another, you know, month later, he was down 60. And then he was in his 50s when he ran his first marathon.
That's amazing. That was the same for my dad, actually. My dad did the same thing.
Yeah, so, you know, I always believe that, you know, in the longevity world, you know, it's not about making yourself like live forever, but how are you going to enhance your life now? I think we all deserve to live a good life up until, you know, the good Lord takes us. You know, it's inevitable.
Yeah, but totally.
What are we going to do to help ourselves?
Well, on that note, because you've shared so much awesome stuff, and I really love that. Yeah, you're someone that looks at the root cause and you sort of have this idea that if we fix the body, the mental health will follow. I really love that. So where can everybody that wants to get into your world, get into your programs, where do they find you on the internet?
Yeah, actually, we are now capable of, because normally it's you have to be in Florida to get the consultation and so forth. But now we're able to just ask people, give us your labs, give us your genetics, and we can create a treatment plan for you. And it's not that much. Yeah. And then so I personally create those plans for them.
Yeah, great.
And yeah, you know, look at your genetics, tie in labs. And then at the end of it, I do give lifestyle things, you know, like grounding, how to sleep right, what kind of exercise is good for you now. So mm-hmm. yeah, my website is paradisebehavioral.com/brainwell if you want to know more information about that. So it's pretty easy. You know, you just say, you know, we have three kinds of like packages. The basic one is only 500. So mm-hmm. because I really want people to have the best plan for them, because it's not mm-hmm. fair that they have to continue to suffer. And that's really what I want the message to put out there. That, you know, and I told Lisa, you know, like, Lisa, I was like, I don't like all this attention, you know, because like, I'm really shy, you know, but like, somehow I was given a directive to, you know, put this plan together for people to actually find a better way to do psychiatry. And we can.
Yeah.
And most people come to me because they are, I would say, desperate. But I want the world to know, like, you don't have to have that experimentation, shoot in the dark, you know, approach of, let's try this medicine, let's try that, you know, like,
yeah,
we can do it from the beginning, get it right from the beginning.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm happy to hear that. And I guess before we finish our conversation today, and maybe yeah. in the context of brain health and what people can do, but what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
Yeah, you know, I guess it's like what I've been talking about, but, you know, I want to stress that you don't have to suffer. You don't have to accept what you've been dealt with where you think your mental health treatment is. There's a better way to do it.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. And thank you for being a leader in the space of doing it differently and doing it more naturally and wanting to help the patient rather than just prescribe things that have, you know, huge numbers of people that are resistant to those prescriptions. So yeah, I'm grateful for your time yeah. and your energy and all of the great work that you're doing. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. I much appreciate it. And then, you know, just again, putting the message out there. Thank
yeah.
you.
Oh, you're so welcome. We'll catch up soon.
Okay.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learned anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.